Friday morning,
yeah.
8:30.
Here we are.
You are the stalwart.
Just put it on the phone.
You are the people like Caleb. So just give me that mountain.
That's at 3:30. You say that.
Oh, that's at 3:30. Well, thank you for being here. My name's Stan Granberg. I'm the executive director of Kairos Church Planting. I'm introducing our session this morning. Before we do that, I have a couple of things to just point out to you. One is this sheet right here. This tells a little bit about Kairos. It has a flap that's tear-off. If you're not on our mailing list, we'd love to have you on our mailing list and let you know what God is doing amongst new churches in the U.S. And particularly, there's a little checkbox that says, I want to be a prayer advocate. We are in the final stages of gathering 1,000 people around the state to be prayer advocates on behalf of God's lost people. And we're at just over 850. Wow. So we're very, very close. But you know, it's taken us 3 years to do that. I've been surprised that it's taken us that long to get 850. Would you be part of that? And just twice a month, you'll receive a very short email. We call it a prayer tap that's written by a planter or someone who's become a Christian. But this gives you a few bullet points to pray for just a few minutes when it comes in. Fill this out and then hand it to me at the end of class, and we'll put you on that.
And we would appreciate that.
Second, if you have one of these, this tells a little bit about the what Kairos was doing in 2015. And so this is our annual report. We love that. Isn't that great? Just one page, not many words, pictures. But I want to point out this number right here. At Easter in 2015, and that's what we count as Easter numbers, because we have people who are coming to these churches, and that Easter is a time when kind of everyone comes. And last year there was 4,355. In 2014 there were 3,974. This year there were over 5,300 in these churches. Just to see that number moving is just a tremendous piece, because most of those people, they have not been in a committed relationship with Jesus. And these are new people to the faith. So we just wanted you to have that peace. We are opening up it's not a new conversation per se. Dr. Mike O'Neill has been part of helping churches that reach the end of their lifespan to find a way to close gracefully since he was here at Pepperdine a number of years ago. But the Heritage 21 Foundation is new, and that's what this is going to be a part of. Just in America today, there is an inescapable transition that's occurring. As institutions that were formed and rooted in the 20th century, in the time of libraries and books and radio, in the 21st century of the internet, when we have in our pockets, you know, more computing power than they had to go to the moon, and we carry that around with us. Companies like Montgomery Ward's, any of you remember Montgomery Ward's?
Yeah.
Borders Bookstore. How about the Crystal Cathedral? And they've all closed. Because there are 20th century institutions that couldn't find a way to make the transition into the 21st century. And across America, there are thousands and thousands of churches that are 20th century churches that have been faithful, that have been dynamic, but that are coming to the end of a naturally expressed lifespan and are wondering, what do we do now? What do we do now? And that's the question. So here's just a few ideas here. The majority of churches that you and I are aware of are 20th century churches. And the majority of those 20th century churches will be closing in the next decade or two. They say in the best research that only 20% of all the existing churches today will be able to make the transition into 21st century life. the generation of churches that will meet the spiritual needs of our children and grandchildren are 21st century churches. They will be started by 21st century people. And so we are at that inflection point in our history where we get to reseed the future of Christianity in America. What a powerful gift that God has given us. And so these facts leave us two big challenges. One, how can VC churches before computer churches? Before computer churches. How can VC churches, and I'm a VC person. I turned 60 this year. I'm a VC person. But how can VC churches either remake themselves into new AC churches or close with the same faithfulness with which they have lived? That's one challenge. Second challenge is how can we reseed our fellowship with a whole new generation of 21st century AC after computer churches? And that's our challenge today. And the Heritage 21 Foundation was created to help us meet both of those challenges. I'm going to let Dr. Mike O'Neill and Scott Lambert carry the story on. Let me introduce you to them. Mike O'Neill is President Emeritus of Oklahoma Christian University, where he was president from 2002 to 2012. He was here at Pepperdine University from 1976 to 2002 as Vice Chancellor, Vice President for Finance, Chief Financial Officer, General Counsel. What a tremendous servant of God that Mike is. And he is he is the chairman of the board of the Heritage 21 Foundation. Scott Lambert is network director, has been that from the beginning of Cairo's church planting, a role that he has just filled marvelously. His wife, Kim, is here today. I'd also just like Bruce Bates, who's part of the Kairos team, raise his hand. But Scott will close us up today. So let me turn it over to Mike and then Scott.
Scott's first.
Thank you. I want to apologize. We almost killed someone in your introduction, Stan. Sally is a librarian. So all that books and library, all over right there. I can see it. Bless you, Sally. Bless you. Thank you, Stan. What a joy to work together. I'm going to put that picture up for just a minute or two and talk. So don't raise your hand, but who would really enjoy this conversation about closing churches? Don't raise your hand. Someone else. thanks for letting me laugh a little bit with you. So we're going to do a couple things today, and Mike and I are sharing time. I'm kind of the storyteller, and I'm going to go emotional and unemotional. So those are your two switches. We'll switch them back and forth. Okay. First of all, let me go emotional for just a minute or so. We started Kairos Church Planting for this reason. To start new things. And I think that'll make sense as we go. Our heart and our heritage is to work with churches of Christ and come from our platform and come from our fellowship and come from the goodness of our places. And that has been going on for 200 years, but if you connect the dots back, you really will go back to AD 33, right? That missional drive that has taken the gospel all over the world. So we stand in a great lineage. Kairos started 11 years ago, I think I'm starting to say 11 years ago by now, to help our fellowship reseed. Reseed, to put new seeds in the ground into the future. All right. I just wanted to say a couple things. This is the process that we actually kind of work through in Kairos, where you work with people as they come around. And we're trying to do it in a way that's network-based and where you're part of a larger team, right? Michael and Emily and Matt and others who are in this room who are planters. And there are pieces in this that just go around. Today, at one level, and we're not really talking about Kairos as such, but I just wanted you to see that in all the godly things that we do and that go on, that piece is right here. Just hang on to that thought. All right.
Whoa.
All right. All right. See, what a great subject, right?
I know. A warning sign.
It's early. It's a warning sign. Don't trip right there. So Heritage 21, okay? We're still kind of in the emotional piece, so everyone can be emotional for a little bit. I'm going to turn that switch off in a moment here, okay? Here are the early warning signs that your church is probably, hear my language, near the end of its life cycle, okay? Declining or stagnant membership for quite a period. Now, that hurts, so I get it. Church membership below 50. Other scholars that we've been working with and researching these other numbers, we're just going to use 50 today. Church membership below 50 and the average age of the church over 50. That's a warning sign. That's a place where you kind of wrestle with, uh-oh. Disputes occurring over issues which risk division. You know, when you get to a certain number, it's a democracy, right? And leadership becomes a little hard, and so everyone's got to vote, and, you know, it becomes divisive. Eight or fewer giving units, and unable to maybe hire a half or full-time evangelist when you're not able to staff and bring that leadership piece, it comes back around to stagnant, declining. Those are all very emotional pieces. We could stay there all morning, but we're not going to. Okay. Just want to give you some warning signs. Just want to give you what are we talking about and kind of try to give some
context.
Yeah, context to what we're getting ready to say. Thank you, brothers and sisters. Now, flip your brains off and go unemotional, okay? Just put all that emotion away. And let's just look at patterns and the way things kind of work a little bit. And this is quick, so man, this is kind of like one of those tests that I'm going to flash things, okay? We can come back and maybe ask some questions. So there are two words that I want to kind of hang on to this morning. I introduced one of them already. If your church is under 50, that is kind of that's the vital sign piece. And then number two, here's the other concept I want to bring to us today. Research, because we're unemotional, right? We're going to research in numbers for a while. We'll flip our switch back on. Research in America tends to indicate that churches live 60 to 100 years. Kind of like me. Okay. I'm getting closer. I'm not there quite yet. So 60 to 100 years. Put those two pieces up there, and we're just going to work through those two. Under 50 and 60 to 100 years. I like stories, so part of the crack team that put these things together is here today, Luke Lambert. We did this 6 years ago, and I haven't had the guts to do it again because it took us hours in my office to put. We took the Church of Christ Directory in the United States in 2000 and charted every single 13,000 churches, and we charted them somewhere. You're about to see some numbers. Case study, a history of our church planting and our fellowship, an encouragement for us to look at. If you have any doubt that the churches of Christ have not been prolific church planters, just take a look at this really quick. This is in the 2000 census. We were the fourth largest congregational group in America. Now, not in numbers and adherence and all that kind of stuff, but because we were so missionary-driven in America, we started churches everywhere. Even the statistic that came out a few years ago, and I don't know if it's true today, but we had more churches per county in America than any other group in America. There you go. Just prolific. Remember, we're unemotional. Here comes some stories. Here we go. We have historically planted new churches in new regions and reached new people through new churches. Numbers. In California, because this is where we are, a lot of Californians here today, in 1980 we had this number of congregations. In 2009 you can see the numbers. Adherence, kind of give you some sense. In 1980 there were 22 million people in California. In 2009 there were 36 million, I think, in California. Numbers. Now this is where the crack team of Luke, Mike, and Isaac, remember doing this? In the study, oh my, it was awful, I know it. Did I pay you?
Not enough.
Well, so I'm glad you went to college. Absolutely. California Churches of Christ and the decade in which they were started. Okay? So, I mean, there was nobody here, kind of in the 1870s. But then look, you know, what? Grapes of Wrath, war, you know, this was that missional piece. It was the last missionary wave. kind of domestically in America. Look at that right here. It really comes out in California. But do you see a pattern? Take a look. We didn't start new things in the last couple of generations. So, hang on to that 50 number. This is 2009. According to the self-reported numbers in the Church of Christ Directory in America, congregations in California under 50 people were 46%. So here, there you go. There's the danger sign, right? No emotion. Just some numbers. Well, it'll be different other places, right? Bruce and Janet, there's the Northeast. 11 states in the Northeast. You see a missionary wave that kind of came. Surely it's better where I grew up in the Midwest. Well, you might see some patterns. Surely Texas, right? Here's the Northwest. And Stan one day put the graph of the population growth where we kept up for a long time. But for about two generations, we've not started new things. Surely it's better in Tennessee. You know, they kind of look at the numbers, and there's the Tennessee statistic. So Tennessee is one of the heartlands, right, of the Churches of Christ. Just kind of, I'm going to bring this other number back now. Churches live 60 to 100 years without a significant rebirth. We'll get to that in just a second. The Churches of Christ and the Restoration Movement just took off right here. There were hundreds of churches in Tennessee. But those who are still going today are these graphs. These are existing churches today in Tennessee that were started in these decades. So these are actually stellar churches. They've been around 200 years almost right here. But you're looking at, where were the hundreds of churches? 60 to 100 years. It's the nature of the beast. It's the life cycle piece that is there. Even in Tennessee, the numbers kind of match the larger story. And across the nation, out of the 13,000 churches, and again, those numbers have changed in the last few years, 44% of our churches, self-reported numbers, not my numbers, self-reported, are under 50 people. So, the 60 to 100 year thing, it's probably good to talk about that a little bit. I'm not sure I could have ever run a marathon, but if I was going to run a marathon, Luke, I need to be your age, right? In my 50s, I'm probably not going to do that. I'm wise. I got other things to do, right? Exactly. But here's the point, right? This is just kind of the life cycle of all of life in some ways. Energizing, growth, rapid growth, consolidating, becoming that studly man in your 40s, 50s. 50s. Let's stay with the 50s. All those kind of things. So you're going to ask yourself, well, what about rejuvenation? And that is a very legitimate question and very on the table. And I think very real. Hold on to that thought, okay, just for a second. That's the generalized cycle, life cycle given to us by Gary McIntosh, a church expert that goes from there. Here's a story of a 90-year story of a church, not from our fellowship, but another church. Look at that. See how it works? They got over 4,000 members in the 60s. In 2005, they were down to, you know, it's just the nature of the beast. Remember, we're unemotional. Okay. Mark gave me this the other day out of the kind of the famous classic Dare to Dream for Christians, right? And I just kind of put the other numbers in or other terms that he used. Well, you look, right? Dream, beliefs, team, Holy Spirit. Effective ministry for that. And I put in red then the decline piece. And the word that hit me, Mark, when you gave this to me, was this one right here.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, of course.
Right. When a church begins to move into that era, that's a sign. Because here you're like, yeah, we're nostalgic, but we love our church, but let's get something done. And so it's just human nature.
Right.
The Lakers are killing me.
Don't say that.
They're not killing anyone else.
I know. It's just us, isn't it? Yeah.
The Warriors are great.
Oh, yeah, I know. I hate Northern California, too, you know, but I love you in the Lord, but not the Giants. You know, when the Lakers are reduced to rooting for a draft pick, that's the highlight of our season. You know, I catch myself thinking about Kareem and Magic and Worthy and the glory days of the Lakers, you know. That's why I brought that up, by the way. and even Kobe and Shaq, you know, not quite so nostalgic. You know, I get a little embarrassed about the short shorts in the 80s, right? You know, but those are my guys, right? You know, D'Angelo Russell, whatever. You can kind of see the life cycle of things. Just a couple other, we're unemotional, okay? We're unemotional. If a movement's going to grow in a given region or country, it needs to probably plant 1% of the numbers that it exists, okay? In other words, there are 13,000 churches of Christ. We probably ought to be starting 130 a year in America to keep even, just to keep even.
Yeah.
So you can see this is the chart for 40 years in the churches of Christ. Well, this is the last one here that's unemotional, and it's a little geeky. Dan, man, you better take a picture of it because you've been taking a picture, which I love. This is, again, we're in the life cycle conversation. So here is a healthy church, this is a healthy movement. Baptist, Lutheran, Methodist, Assemblies of God, fill in the blank, right? This would be healthy. They're starting 2% of themselves every year. And they got churches kind of in this range, right? 11 to 40 years, over 40. Most healthy church movements are closing a percentage and reinvesting it back in. So, this is the healthy ideal, right? You're the Southern Baptist, and that's why they have been so prolific in this particular generation. Yeah, Daryl.
David, talk about closing. Are you talking about consolidating? We have two in a similar area that are small, and
I'm really talking about closing churches.
Close away.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Here are the Southern Baptists, and that's why they're kind of everywhere, right? You know, they've got a lot of closing that gets reinvested back in. Here are the Lutherans. They've started church planting movements out of the Lutherans. This has tended to have been us, and this is about a 3 or 4 year old statistic. Mm-hmm. But you see, I'm not just talking about we've got to have new churches. You've got to have a distribution of life cycle to probably be a healthy movement. So, I mean, I think if you look here, Southern Baptists have gotten back in the game of launching, and they've gotten some balance, right? They've got some healthy churches. They've got some that are 10 years old. They got some that are 50 years old. We've got some that are 100 years old. So the life cycle piece kind of sits there, I think, with all of us. Remember, we're being unemotional. Just the nature of things. I think kind of what happens, and Mike, I'll be up in about 2 minutes here. I think what begins to happen is when you start something, you find great success, right? The era in which you start. So Matt, Emily, Michael, as you guys are getting ready to plant these churches, you're going to find success in reaching. And the churches will outlive you guys, and they'll remember these glory days because they grew into strength out of the era. They found success, reaching people, gathering people, being a great church. But you get 3 or 4 generations away from those days, and you're not able to have a significant rebirth, then it becomes hard. This is the place right here that it has to have a rebirth, a restart, a something.
Right?
Well, we're part of the Hilltop Church of Christ in El Segundo, and 20 years ago it was 12 people, and they brought John Reed in, who was a good leader, and today we're 200, 225, because it was a significant rebirth. Mm-hmm. They renamed the church, they got a new mission, they went out and did it. But it's hard on churches to do that. Research shows that 1 out of 20 churches can do that successfully in America. Well, so Heritage 21, we've started this foundation. I'm going to turn it over to Mike in just a minute. We started this foundation to help the churches of Christ do this well. So now you can turn your emotional switch back on a little bit if you don't mind. Here's where we are. We are incorporated. We've begun working with some churches. For us, now they're back to the emotional pieces. You're talking about your church. So this is a conversation. There's probably mediation. There's pastoral care. You're talking about the Red Line Church of Christ that started 140 years ago that my two great-grandmothers helped start, that I was part of. I'm 4th generation out of that church. You're down to 20 people. And it kills them to talk about it. So we're back to the emotion, right? So the Heritage 21 Foundation is dedicated to working through the pastoral care. There's also got to be an assessment period. Otherwise, you know, if someone comes in to talk to you, everyone here is pretty old enough to, you feel like Brother Kevorkian. Remember the guy who came in with the death suicide guy, you know? And that's why this is a conversation. It's pastoral care. Assessments, should you close? Should you redo? We've been working on some tools. We've been working to put together our legal and professional guidance to help this happen in a good way. Bylaws, lawyers, real estate networks, all that kind of stuff. We believe every church that closes needs to celebrate. Because they did their work for the Lord for their 60 to 100 years. Well, that's different language, isn't it? Because usually what we hear is, well, not on my watch.
Right.
And I get that. I totally get it. But we need to be celebrating. We're also talking about protecting. Sometimes maybe you need someone to come in and take title for a while if there's that big dispute or battle going on so it just doesn't get flittered off. Guidance, and we're going to help with this guidance of distribution of resources. We got to respect the church's wishes. Where do they want their money to go? Then we're asking them to put some back in for church planting, for kingdom growth in other areas, not just all Kairos. This is a little separate from Kairos in the long run. And then what we used earlier, reseeding the kingdom of God for this century. So these guys that are planting churches over here, guys, that's California. So Emily, I blew you on that too. These folks who are planting churches are going to look different than the ones in the 1940s and 1930s. And those are the ones we're mourning right now. No one's really mourning the death of the churches from the 1620s or 1420s, right? These are our people. Mike, come on up and lead us through this. Mike O'Neill has been one of our guides and our leaders in putting this together. He's chairman of our board. Mike, thank you.
Hey, it's great to be back home. I feel like 26 years here makes this home. And good to see all of you, many friends in this room. And it's just a joy to work with Stan and Scott and some other brothers on something so important as this. And I hope one of the things you picked up from what Scott said in all of this is more of a natural process than maybe we're willing to admit. And we need to learn to deal with it, knowing that the emotions are there. We need to learn to deal with it with the combination of emotion and rational thought about it, rather than just all on one side or the other of that. And so it's something whose time, I think, has come. You know, as we think about what we're trying to do with Heritage 21, we're trying to be good stewards of kingdom resources that God has given us, and many of us have certainly seen occasions where that has not been the case, and then be faithful to those who sacrificed and made things happen. Just a little history that was hinted at already, that this is not the first time that we have addressed this kind of issue. It was, 39 years ago? 29 years ago, you get my math right, that at this very lectureship, Tom Boston and I, out of watching some things happen in Southern California churches, we talked about this. W.L. Fletcher, who many of us know and love, who's now passed on to be with the Lord, he's the one that kind of brought this to our attention back in those days and saying, boy, we've got some churches in trouble. What do we do about that? And so in 1988, we created something after this lectureship and thinking about it and conferring with a lot of brethren. We created something called the San Diego Christian Church Property Corporation. And basically it was just a county-wide nonprofit that was designed to help churches go through this process in a little less emotional state, but primarily it was designed to protect the assets, make sure that they don't just disappear. And we saw cases where that was very close. These three churches, two of them in particular, Lemon Grove and Linda Vista, those assets were preserved. National City, there were other churches that I believe were blessed as a result of the conversation, but never actually put their property into the foundation. And then in 1996, seeing that happening in Los Angeles, we created the Los Angeles Church Property Corporation, and Westchester Church was put into that, and we began to update bylaws and articles of some churches. And then in 2001, I published an article in the Christian Chronicle helping us, brethren, to understand that this is a problem and that we need to consider these issues. I won't repeat all of this, but what I wanted to show you is that, you know, there are progressions in some of this. And some of these dangers, already some been mentioned too, but there are literally people who go in and try to take over church properties. I mean, I've experienced that. Many of you probably have seen that too, that maybe do not share what we have understood about Scripture. There's a neglect of property. Sometimes they just decline to the point that they don't have the money to repair them anymore, and they just decline and they're worthless. Strong-willed individuals come in. Assets get sold and the assets diverted for non-kingdom purposes, and that's all of that's a breach of stewardship in my view. Many of us are not willing to acknowledge that emotional peace that God has talked about, just not willing to acknowledge that we're in trouble. We all tend to think, at whatever age, right, Scott, you're running into some of these, maybe the older we get, it may even be worse, but as long as I'm here, it's not going to happen on my watch, and it's okay as long as I'm here, it'll be, well... We all know this life is fleeting, isn't it? Even if we live a full life, it goes pretty fast. And I don't like those curves you put up there. I know where I am on those curves, Scott. Don't do that to me anymore.
Exactly.
But again, all of this is a natural tendency to think that way. And we're so in love with what we've done through the years in our congregations that we do things. I won't read all of this, but this was some of the articles from the LA Church Property Corporation about protecting and managing and overseeing and leasing the churches back to them as long as they thought they might be able to revive, so that, you know, it wasn't just taking the assets away. It was letting them continue to work out whatever the natural cycle may be. It may be that they do ramp back up. And so we were doing those sort of things and then actually turning back some of the properties to those churches that did revive. Here's just a few more statistics I wanted you to see. I went to the same source that y'all did your and looked back from 1990 to 2015. And our fellowship lost 814 congregations in that time. That was 6.6% of all of our congregations that declined in that point. The important thing I'd want you to see here, if you could do the math quickly, is that the average over that 25-year period was 32.5 churches a year that closed, or at least didn't report anymore. Something happened to them. But more recently, it's been about 50 per year. So that's accelerating somewhat. Okay, in our 2001 article and even today, we're saying there's just a number of things that we need to start doing. We certainly need to pray about this issue. God can work in ways that none of us can even begin to see. And so, you know, I think our prayer should always be that, wow, we hope new life comes into these churches and that they can revive and that we can help them in that process and find resources for them to do that. But what we're trying to do, even beginning today in this class, is just to create awareness in our fellowship of this problem so we can learn to address it with that balance of reason and emotion, rather than perhaps just one side or the other, or just ignoring it and not being good stewards. So spotting those early warning signs, legal protections, let me say a word about that. I'm a lawyer. I confess that. I'm trying to repent. You know, so my tendency is always to go to, okay, let's see how we can solve this with a legal solution. You can't solve all of this with a legal solution. You can do some protections, and I really encourage people to think about those protections that we can do. you know, by strengthening what's in the bylaws and strengthening what's in the articles of incorporation of the church, and maybe even some educating people about these sort of things. But the courts are not well suited to solving church problems. And in fact, our constitutional system here in America basically says courts ought to stay out of this business. Now, some they dabble in it sometimes anyway, but that they're not really a good solution to this problem. And once it gets to that declining, pretty far down on that the decline, you're not going to have much success with any courts helping you there. We've watched a lot of this with the churches that are very hierarchical, and it doesn't even work very well there, but sometimes it works a little better because of their structures. Certainly doesn't work well in our independent congregation methodologies. Bringing Christian mediation, you know, people who understand this problem, who can talk to both sides in a non-emotional fashion about what their options are, and helping people work through it, and even compromising some issues in that, I think is important. And then the other piece that H21 is trying to do is to provide an entity that can be trusted to be a good steward over the resources, not an entity that is trying to take property. I mean, that's not the goal of this. Certainly the goal is to make sure the assets do get kept used for kingdom purposes, and hopefully within our fellowship. I think that's an important matter in terms of both stewardship and faithfulness, as I mentioned on the first slide, that the people who have sacrificed to create these resources are people who, you know, are committed to our fellowship and our understanding, and that's not being judgmental about other people who are Christians that are going to be in heaven with us. I'm sure there's just, you know, millions and billions of those, perhaps, that are going to be there with us. And so we're not judging that and not saying that those people are not Christians and therefore we ought to keep the assets away from them. We're not saying that at all. We're saying we need to be faithful to what we've been. And we need to be, you know, I would encourage us, our fellowship has been going through now for several decades, I think, kind of a self-examination, trying to figure out who we are and why are we what we are. And we need to be proud of so many good things in our fellowship. There's some things, but every fellowship, if you know any Baptists or you know any Catholics or you know any Episcopalians, you know they have the same problems we do, don't they, most of them. And so we don't need to be any more ashamed than they're ashamed of theirs. And we need to say, we have something precious in this fellowship. And let's do our best to be good stewards over those things in our fellowship. So I think that's important. Today, maybe we didn't have 30 years ago when we first started this conversation as much of this, but today we do have some new resources that we can turn to. New Hope or Hope Network Ministries, you know, is trying to help churches be more healthy and deal with their leaderships. Kairos itself is seeing this need and is willing to put resources and effort into it. MRN, though they're focused mainly on mission-type things, they're very interested in this issue. Elder Link, we're starting something new at Oklahoma Christian that will be partnering with Hope Network Ministries to try to help churches be healthy. There's just more resources that we can bring to the table today. So our vision is to, it's been created to address this phenomenon within the churches of Christ, seeking to repurpose assets to bless new churches and Christian ministries. Among our talking points, and we're going to give these to you, we've got some to hand out. The question we had to address, we should address, is not whether the closings will happen, but whether we'll address them in a way that preserves the dignity and sacrifice of congregations that are closing and blesses the future of new congregations and ministries that could arise or expand from the older church's legacy of faith and stewardship. That's really what Heritage 21 is about. It's an Arkansas corporation. The board members, right now, there's only five of us. We're going to be looking for more. These are scattered all over the United States purposefully. Brethren who are interested in this issue and are willing to step up and say, okay, this is an issue we've got to address, but we want to broaden that, and we will do so. So we're going to try to assist churches in that way. By the way, we're going to give you time for some questions here in just a very few moments, and so let's have some of that interaction. What's next? Well, we need counsel, and we need your prayers for what we're doing. We need volunteers, because five or ten of us can't do this. These churches take a lot of hand-holding, a lot of nurturing, you know, to work with. You don't just waltz right in one day and solve all the problems that have been brewing for 40 years or something. We need you and others to spread the word about there are some resources that can be brought to the table to deal with these issues. The who to contact will be on this material, and what we'll do. I just want you to know that I really believe that Solomon dealt with this many years ago, didn't he? When he talked about how all of these things, there's times for things to decline and to die. And so we need to not necessarily be apologetic. I know in my own state of Oklahoma, but it's true in a lot of states, where the move from the rural communities to the cities, that's just a natural progression, and it's going to affect our churches. And some of the inner city issues deal with that also. So we want your thoughts, your suggestions, your counsel as we undertake it. This is brand new, it's a nonprofit, so if people are giving to us, and we have some people already committed to kind of seeding this process, they'll get a tax deduction for doing so. And so let me open here for questions from any of you. And Scott and Stan, you help us, and we'll pass out these documents that kind of tell you a little bit more about Heritage 21.
I love this man. His fingerprints have been all over these things as he's thought about the future for years. Mm-hmm.
I'm at the stage of life where I'm cleaning up all the messes I made 30 and 40 years ago, folks.
We won't put that slide back up again. So let's make our questions fairly quick. Hi, Bill.
Even if we're not a non-institutional Church of Christ, we all bear some of the, I don't want to call it distrust, but skepticism about organizations outside our congregation. So we entrust things like missions and other things to elders in a particular congregation to do it. This end-of-life decision, which is basically taken, if we've been in congregations and watched people of small means donating beyond generously, so it hurts to build and sustain a congregation and a ministry. Yeah. And then we're asked at the end of life in a congregation to turn the assets over to something that may use it for scholarships to an expensive Christian college on the ocean.
That shall remain nameless.
And do these other things. I have this kind of an institution where with no aspersions on your board of directors, what makes me uncomfortable is if we're talking about elders here and it's a sound fellowship, we think it is, and we're talking about turning assets over to that, that sounds okay. But to look for yet another big institution that's basically an asset receiver, looking at taking real estate, especially in a place like California where it can be very valuable, mm-hmm. and redeploying it in ways that are completely unspecified, new ministries. And with some of these new church plantings, my question is, where are the elders? Where's the governance? Because I see the core of it being an entrepreneurial, fast-moving young minister who really wants no control rods stuck in. And so one of my questions is about the governance. Why should we be prepared to trust an institutional entity like this out beyond the congregation? And I think a skeptic could say, and I'm not casting any aspersions on you, yeah, this is a great way to pull the money in, set up a big office, create an endowment, and hoard, like a lot of big institutions do, and do small good. How does this work to preserve biblical governance of the entity?
You want to tackle it first?
Yeah, I do, actually. Okay. That's a great question, and we don't have any offices on the ocean, so we don't, you know. I think at the moment the office is in my garage at the moment, my office is, and different things. That's a great question, Bill, and I think because of time, let me just answer it this way. It's been hard to grow our fellowship again without collaborative networks that do some of this stuff together, so I think that's the hard part. You're right about hard charging young leaders. That's who start churches, you know, that sort of thing. For us to do it collaboratively is probably more powerful than to stay in our own silos. That's kind of, I think, what I would say. Mike?
Yeah.
Bill, we'll have lunch. I would love that.
Yeah, there's no perfect answer to that. But mm-hmm. one of the reasons we're trying to spread this, the board of directors of Heritage 21, is to get people who are respected in our fellowship and who are known to be good stewards. But an interesting thing that we have talked about, and actually we did back in these property corporations that were done 20 or 30 years ago, is that we allow the church that's dying to help designate where those funds, how they will get used.
Well, it's their money. It's their will.
Yeah, we're not trying to dictate, come trust us, and we'll take care of it for you. No, we're just trying to provide resources to help people and help churches, and then we'll repurpose it however they wish. And that I think that's a healthy piece of it. Okay. That doesn't answer the question of are there elders involved, except some of these board members are elders, okay? And we'll look for more people that have that credential as well.
I can't believe I'm an elder. Yeah. Hey, yeah, so quick questions. Yeah, how about over here and then Brendan? Yeah. Brett.
First of all, I would like to just thank you for louder. I'd just like to thank you for the vision and the thought. Because in most cases, we take it for granted that the Lord will provide, the Lord will do this, you know. And I think that's a lazy way of going around things sometimes.
Thank you. Amen.
I think that the next step to this, if I could add something, is to create this thing in a platform that can allow people to access it from wherever they need. For example, we are in Africa. And I think we need this. Just like you need it. And I think we have never, ever been able to transcend to this level as yet. And this can become a platform that could be collaborative for us to also be able to share ideas and thoughts.
Yeah.
But also, there are many other resources. You know, I wanted to come to your modeling of your research. Because we have a situation where our population is becoming younger and younger.
Yeah.
Versus being in your population or your population.
Older and older.
Kind of older,
right.
And older.
Right.
And therefore, how will this research or model fit into our kind of environment? Before we even come to the property issues. But on the property issues, what I would like to suggest is that there are many other, I work for a technology company. So there are many platforms, technology-wise, that we could create that could make this thing an advisory type of thing. That if people need to get advices, it should not be for free because we can afford it as churches. That your organization could provide those advisory services that are Christian based.
Yeah.
And then the questions that he's asking with regards to the elders, then you can be able to advise the elders of the church on what to do when we get ourselves in this situation, or proactively, when we realize that we are going towards that situation. What is it that we need to do proactively? Otherwise, sometimes it becomes too late, and the property is attached. There's nothing much you can do.
Sometimes it's too late for anything we want to bring in.
Nobody, you know, nobody can save it. But if you have a Christian-based movement or organization like this that can also be able to save a situation like that, it is better that it's in the hands of the right people than if it goes to the wrong people.
Eventually, we hope to have a website with a lot of resources on it. And as this need is more recognized and we have more professionals and church leaders around the country that join in this effort, we'll involve them in that opportunity to counsel in their own region.
Amen. And I would just add that, to me, and this kind of goes for both you guys, I think your questions, there's got to be a great need for transparency. And we need quick infusions back into our fellowship in America. You're a younger movement in Africa, but you've got young people that they need churches. They need churches that make sense to them. So you're in the same situation. Thank you. One more. I know we got you hostage. I don't want to have you hostage.
Maybe we'll do two.
Can we do two more? Two more. Yeah.
I've got a tax accounting question. Heritage 21 Foundation.
Save that. Save that one, because that could be boring. So well, come on up here, Brent, after the good pass.
I just want to ask you.
Yeah.
It says 14 words here. Tax exempt status is pending with the IRS.
Oh, yeah.
It's expected to be approved very soon. So if we give a donation this year, but it's not approved until next year, how does that work?
Two quick answers to that. One is the IRS, when they grant your tax exemption, it's a look back to when you began, okay? So it would still qualify, but to even be safer, we've suggested to people, if you want to give something for this purpose, you could give it to Kairos, and they will use it for this purpose. So that they're already approved. And ours are filed. It just takes 90 to 120 days to get IRS approval.
Yeah. We've been working with about 8 churches around the country, literally from northeast to here. All right. Hi, Larry.
Yeah.
Just one, you bet.
One quick one. How are you going to expand this into other regions or areas? I'm from Michigan.
Yeah.
We've had, I know, in the time I've been there, at least 4 churches closed.
Yeah.
The properties, I'm not sure what's happened to all the... Yeah. Some of them went to Rochester College and this kind of thing. But, so the question is, how can you expand it? I know straight state regulations sometimes govern a lot of this, so...
Well, that's why we hope our volunteer network and our board network expands with this. And, you know, there's nothing that says, like we did for San Diego County and L.A. County, that you couldn't create one in Michigan, or you couldn't create one just for New York, or, you know, that. And we would applaud that. The purpose here is not that we control anything. The purpose is, let's be good stewards.
We can inspire. Hey, great. This is... Heritage 21 is a national piece. Quick word?
Just a quick word. You know, I'm on the other end of the curve there. But, you know, I we're still viable.
Yeah.
We're still here.
Oh, man.
So when we talk about resources, obviously we're talking about financial and property. I understand that. But the people resources, what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
So do you have a way of taking those people and those helping them transition, helping them find a new home, helping them still feel viable and wanted and needed? To me, that's part of the resource as
wonderful.
The person who's still, you know, at that end of the curve, but maybe got a little life left in me. That's important resource.
This is pastoral care.
It is.
Absolutely. We see that as extremely important.
It's vital.
Don't want this to just focus on entirely on property.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's an important piece, but it's not all of it.
Yeah. Sure.
Well, listen, we'll hang around here.
Yeah.
Right?
And I was going to say one final thing, Mike.
Okay.
I don't think we said it very well. Heritage 21.
What's the 21 for?
Working from our heritage for the 21st century.
Okay.
Thank you. Bless you. Mike, I realize I hadn't said that. So.
Yeah, I'm glad you did.
Hi, Bruce.